Next up we have Miss Fraser. And the report was pre-circulated. Is that correct? Or
probably only this morning at some point.
Oh, okay. So, Ms. Oliver, you got the Ms. Fraser's statement? Welcome.
Thank you.
Right, so we're resuming and everybody's hearing okay. I'll turn my mic off and let Ms. Fraser lead.
So have the other commissioners got an electronic copy of my statement? Thank you. So I will start at paragraph 3, where I summarise key concerns expressed in my section 42A report and that remain. I won't read through all of these. I think they were set out in my evidence in chief, and they're all there. Moving on to information gaps at paragraph 4, in section 1.7 of my section 42A report, I highlighted areas where it would be useful to have some additional information, and I've provided an update below with regard to that. For the first point, there's no assessment has been provided regarding sensitivity testing with the Paniti Works and bypasses of Bunnythorpe. The second point is with regard to the Bunnythorpe node, and reference is included in Mark Georgeson's evidence to reporting at section 10.1 of the ITA that a coordinated traffic signal at the Bunnythorpe node has been tested. Table 10.5 of his evidence in chief reports that a signalised intersection is expected to operate with a level of service C. I note that no design has been provided, nor has any commitment been made to this as a mitigation measure. It also remains unclear whether any additional land would be needed to deliver a signalised intersection in this location. The next point is with regard to the ALCAM safety assessment. The requested assessments have been undertaken and reported on in Mark Georgeson's evidence in chief at paragraph 10.7. A condition has been proposed for LSCIAs to be undertaken at these level crossings in the future, which I support. Regarding the access through to Roberts Line for 422 and 422A Railway Road, a commitment is included to provide the access, but no details provided regarding the design of the access and its ability to provide for the particular requirements of the properties. The latest draft of the Section 42A conditions includes a condition that the access is able to accommodate heavy vehicles. If you remember, we heard that that business has quite large trucks accessing it, but I think I'd discuss that a bit more later on. And with regard to the next point, which is to do with foodstuffs, I discuss the foodstuffs driveway in more detail later in this summary. The next point is, there's a couple of points here regarding Maple Street. Mark Georgeson confirms that paragraph 10.16 of his evidence that Maple Street will not be impacted by the perimeter road and will not be used for construction access purposes. The latest draft of conditions that Mr. Copplestone will present include a condition that there should be no construction traffic activity on Maple Street, which also addresses not the following point, but the one below that with regard to the family at 9 Maple Street with regard to the access next to their property or potential for access. Just jumping back up to the internal level crossing, so no further assessment was provided with regard to the interaction with the internal level crossings, and I discuss this more in full later in this statement. With regard to the access points for construction purposes, I realise that I've failed to put in a reference here into to Mr. Georgeson's evidence. There is still uncertainty regarding the site access points for construction purposes, which I think at this stage is relying more on the construction traffic management plan to confirm those. The conditions have been up with regard to the road network integration plan. The conditions have been updated to require consultation with Waka Kotahi, PNCC, MDC, and Horizons. And the latest draft conditions include the same certification process for the RNIPS for the management plans, and this is in the set that Ms. Copplestone will present. Moving on to matters arising during the hearing, at paragraphs 5.12 and 5.14 of the Kiwi Rail's legal submissions, the possibility of a permitted baseline is discussed. The submission included, there are effects which are permitted under the district plan and are comparable to the activities proposed to be authorised by the notice of requirement. My understanding is that almost all activities within the NEIZ are likely to trigger discretionary assessment, with transport effects being a consideration. The NEIZ extension plan change did not assess traffic effects beyond the immediate area of the extension. As a result, the scale of traffic effects on the wider road network associated with the full development of the NEIZ was not known at the time the plan change was adopted. I also note that it is difficult to assess the scale of transport effects associated with the incremental addition of traffic onto a network which is becoming increasingly congested. All this points to the importance of robust conditions, including management plans, to identify and mitigate ongoing effects. At paragraph 6.3, the submission includes there is the potential for some adverse economic effects as a result of changes in access and traffic flow. The submission goes on to say that these effects are mitigated by design and that there are negligible effects on a small number of businesses. With existing variability in travel times during peak periods, I consider that there is the potential for a large number of businesses, residents and road users to experience increased travel times as a result of worsening congestion. Paragraph 6.17 refers to damage to road surfaces. The haulage routes and increase in truck activity on the road network will only be known once the sources of construction materials are identified. At this stage, these factors are unknown, and as such, the potential and scale of adverse effects are unknown. We do, however, have some understanding of the volumes involved. Looking at the Kiwi Rail Design, Construction and Operation Report, section 1.3.3.1, approximately 1.5 million cubic metres of fill is to be imported, plus a 700 millimetre layer of granular fill to go over the site, plus ballast, concrete and asphalt. Section 6.35 of the AEE includes that the main operational area is 130 hectares. As such, a 700 millimetre layer would have a volume of 910,000 cubic metres. Given these volumes of material to be hauled to the site, I've recommended that conditions are put in place to require that Kiwi Rail ensure that any road pavement damage caused by heavy vehicles as a result of construction activities is repaired. The legal submissions indicate that there are other methods and reference the decision of North Shore Bulk Limited versus Auckland Council. As I read it, the resource consent application was for a managed landfill operation. The capacity applied for was 600,000 cubic metres over 10 years with a maximum of 160 truck movements per day. The road in this case had a 2.6 kilometre length of local road between the nearby highway and the landfill site. The freight hub is a very different proposal, being a notice of requirement with around four times the volume of material being imported, with no practical or desirable way of limiting the number of truck movements. To the contrary, it will be desired that construction is completed swiftly. Further, the haulage routes are unknown at this time, and the activity is likely to occur over a relatively short time frame, possibly 2 years. I'm not a pavement engineer, and I have deferred to Mr. Van Bentham's expertise in these matters when it comes to identifying a practical formula for targeting Kiwi Rail's potential effect on the roads that will be ultimately used. As a result of both Michael Skelton's and Mark Georgeson's presentations, there was a discussion around the interaction between the internal rail level crossing and the external road network. The discussion focused on queuing space for vehicles turning into the site. Other matters include forward sight lines to the crossing and to queues formed at the crossing. From the extract below, sourced from the NZTA Traffic Control Devices Manual Part 9 Level Crossings, It appears unlikely that there will be enough space between the Richardson Line, Roberts Line roundabout and the internal level crossing to accommodate the necessary advance warning signage and markings. This highlights the need for road safety audits to be undertaken of the access points to the freight hub site, with particular consideration of the interaction with the internal level crossings. The detailed design of the intersection will also need to include measures to prevent traffic queuing to enter the site from blocking back through the intersection. Some queuing provision is shown for traffic turning in left or right from Roberts Line, but a similar provision for vehicles entering from Richardson's Line is more difficult to include. Michael Nixon has provided expert traffic evidence on behalf of Foodstuffs North Island Limited. At his paragraph 2.2, he summarises his concerns with the notice of requirement proposal as being the geometry of the railway road to Roberts Line road alignment, specifically the effects on available site distance at the distribution centre site vehicle crossings, the closure of railway road north of Roberts Line and the redirection of traffic in front of the DC site with the increase in volumes in front of the DC site, the safe and efficient operation of the site vehicle crossings may be compromised. The notice of requirement for land to be taken from the DC site to facilitate construction of the roundabout. Alternative options to avoid taking land from the DC site have not been fully investigated. Regarding the available site distance towards the east from the DC staff car park driveway, Mr. Nixon estimates a future site distance of 95 metres. I calculate, based on the Austroads guidance, that for light vehicles with a minimum gap acceptance of 5 seconds in a 60 km/h speed environment to join or cross the westbound traffic flow on Roberts Line, a sight line of at least 83 metres is needed. The estimated available sight distance exceeds this assessed minimum gap sight distance by around 12 metres. Paragraph 4.9 of Mr. Georgeson's rebuttal evidence, the reported forecast performance of the staff car park driveway includes average delays of up to 18 seconds for the 2051 freight hub scenario. This level of delay is widely considered acceptable and is unlikely to result in safety concerns. I consider, based on Mr. Georgeson's analysis, that the staff car park driveway can be expected to continue to operate safely and efficiently. It should, however, be noted that any extension of the sight line towards the east through planting removal or control would add to the safe performance of the driveway. I share Mr. Nixon's concerns regarding trucks exiting the DC site. There is general agreement between the experts that articulated trucks, semi-trailers and B-trains will need a gap in the traffic flow on Roberts Line of at least 10 seconds to exit the site. A 10-second gap in a 60 km/h speed environment has an associated minimum gap site distance of 167 metres. Figure 151, which is attached to Mark Georgeson's rebuttal evidence, shows an estimated available site distance of 142 metres towards the east for an exiting truck. This means an exiting truck will need the full sight line to be clear of traffic. If a northbound vehicle on Railway Road is approaching the turn into Roberts Line as a truck starts to exit, the approaching vehicle will need to slow down, but most likely not need to stop as the truck completes its turn and clears the traffic lane. Whether a truck can safely exit the DC site is a matter of both the available sight line and the availability of gaps in the frontage traffic flow. At paragraph 4.9 of Mr. Georgeson's evidence, he estimates that average delays for trucks exiting the site will increase from the current 3 seconds to 89 seconds in 2031 with the freight hub and more than 120 seconds by 2051. Average delays of 89 seconds and more than 120 seconds show that there are not sufficient gaps in the traffic flow, and I consider these levels of delay to be unacceptable. These figures represent average delays, so 50% of all exiting trucks would experience even larger delays. At paragraph 4.13 of his rebuttal evidence, Mr. Georgeson comments that if these larger delays eventuate, trucks can turn left out and make a U-turn at the proposed Roberts Line Richardson's Line roundabout. During the hearing, Mr. Nixon said, and I agree, that the left turn out will require a similar gap in the traffic flow to a right turn out and will result in following traffic needing to slow to the speed of the truck that has recently joined Roberts Line from a standstill. I do not consider that the arrangement shown in figures 148 to 151 attached to Mr. Georgeson's rebuttal evidence demonstrate that safe egress can be achieved for trucks exiting the Foodstuff site. Regarding the proposed designation across the northern corner of the foodstuff site at the intersection of Roberts Line and Richardson's Line, and as shown in figure 148 attached to Mr. Georgeson's rebuttal evidence, I consider that while the notice of requirement includes a larger part of the site, the actual land needed for the intersection is unlikely to have any significant impact on the expansion and access options for the foodstuff site. I note that Mr. Brady Nixon, speaking for foodstuffs, had a different view on this. Sarah Downs provided evidence on behalf of Waka Kotahi. I note at paragraph 2.3 that Waka Kotahi considers that the amended conditions appropriately address the matters raised in its submission. At 6.5, paragraph 6.5, that the associated construction and operation of the freight hub will have a significant impact on the form and function of the transport network. At paragraph 6.6, that the testing of several Paniti programs highlighted that although routes to access Tremaine Ave may change because of these improvements or changes, it is still a key origin and destination for trips across the network. At paragraph 6.7, she includes that preliminary modelling of the freight hub development shows that the proposal will result in a significant reduction in freight volumes along Tremaine Ave, the scale of which will relate to the replacement land use of the existing facility. Therefore, flow reductions on Tremaine Ave are dependent on Kiwi Rail and any subsequent land use of the existing facility. I'm not aware of evidence of a significant reduction in freight volumes along Tremaine Ave. I consider that there remains uncertainty around the ongoing and future traffic performance of Tremaine Avenue. Beyond the confirmation of the notice of requirement at paragraph 6.9, she comments that there will be a need to undertake further investigation to finalise the precursor transport system activities essential to support the safe construction and operation of the freight hub. And in her final paragraph, she comments that as Kiwi Rail progressed through the development of the proposed freight hub, a review of the preferred Paniti programme will need to be undertaken, which I interpret to mean that the freight hub will likely influence the delivery of the Paniti programmes. I note that the Ministry of Education has provided a letter to the panel. This states that the Ministry considers that the revised conditions provide appropriate management of potential effects on Bunnythorpe School and other local school. The Ministry therefore supports the proposed designation conditions. Commissioner Mackinson asked Mr. Georgeson how changes in proportions of heavy vehicles are accounted for in the infrastructure risk rating assessment. Mr. Georgeson prepared supplementary evidence on this matter. Based on his evidence and my own reading of the IRR manual, I understand that the assessment methodology is designed to assess road safety risk primarily as an input to the speed management process. Pedestrian and cyclist activity is accounted for in the land use parameter with no consideration of actual or forecast volumes of pedestrians and cyclists. And the traffic volume bands used are large and do not include allowance for either the proportion of or changes in the proportion of freight traffic. Future roading changes within the Northeast Industrial Zone have been discussed. My understanding from discussions with Robert Van Bentham is that there are programme carriageway widening improvements to Richardson's Line within the NEIZ, including a shared path, and that the council are actively seeking to provide a road link between Richardson's Line and Alderson Drive, which in turn connects with El Prado Drive. There is less certainty around any upgrade of the El Prado Drive intersection with Railway Road and of the other roading changes included in the structure plan map for the NEIZ. Commissioner Sweetman asked Mr. Georgeson about where he thought that a direct connection might be provided between the Northeast Industrial Zone and the freight hub. Mr. Georgeson's view is that such a connection is not needed, with the existing and proposed roading arrangement providing suitable connectivity. My understanding is that if a bespoke corridor was provided for the movement of containers between the two sites by specialised container movers rather than by road trucks, it would need to be very wide, around 40 to 50 metres, and level. My expectation has been that if such a corridor were to be provided, it would run along, and this should say the eastern side of Richardson's Line. It would then need to cross Roberts Line to enter the freight hub with the associated challenges of crossing both a road and an internal rail corridor. This notice of requirement does not include allowance for such a connection. The owners of 9A Maple Street expressed concern about the paper road adjacent to their property being used for construction traffic access to the freight hub site. In his evidence, Mr. Georgeson said that Maple Street will not get used for construction purposes. I consider that a condition might be appropriate to ensure that, and this has been included in the latest version of conditions that Ms. Copplestone will present. We heard from Nathan Barnes, who owns the business at 422A Richardson's Line. He indicated that there could be up to 150 vehicle movements per day associated with his business, and that this can include B-trains and semi-trailer trucks accessing the site with deliveries. Given the number and type of vehicle movements, along with the need for the connection to Roberts Line to accommodate access to 422 Richardson's Line and 684 Roberts Line, I consider that this link will need to be formed by KiwiRail to a road standard. The design will need to allow for the largest trucks to be able to turn to and from Roberts Line. The presentation by Manawatu District Council highlighted the expected residential and industrial growth in Fielding and the associated increases in traffic activity, in particular in the direction of the freight hub and Palmerston North. An update was also provided regarding the ongoing delivery of the shared path between Fielding and Bunnythorpe. We heard how the vertical alignment of Roberts Line constrains site distances at some of the driveways, possibly to around 100 metres. Both the construction and operation traffic management plans will need to ensure that the speed environment and available site distances are matched to provide for safe turning to and from the frontage properties on Roberts Line between Railway Road and Kairanga Bunnythorpe Road. I recommend that a condition is included to ensure the ongoing safe operation of this section of Roberts Line. So there are a number of ongoing areas of contention, which are largely highlighted through the list of the ongoing concerns, including at the front of the statement. I propose the next thing I would do is go through the conditions and just highlight, but if you want to ask questions, I don't know whether if there's anything non-condition specific that there are questions on, I could answer those now or move on to the conditions.
Commissioner Mackinson, how do you want to proceed on that point?
I think I would prefer to ask questions at the end because I have a feeling there may be quite a lot of crossover between the question and how it relates to conditions. So you may actually preempt some of those and save yourself some pain.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm working with the 29th September conditions.
Working draft.
The working draft, yes. And the conditions that I would like to talk through start at condition 45 on page 8. So condition 45 is to do with the level crossings, and this is where we've got the requirement for the local crossing safety impact assessments to be undertaken, and there's the list of locations, and this usefully now includes the pedestrian level crossings in the vicinity of the Marae and Tawanui School, so comfortable with that. I think that's the main point for me from that, from the level crossing conditions. The next suite of conditions are with regard to the road network integration plan. And here in condition 50, we set out the objective, well, we set out the sort of key parts of the infrastructure that we're concerned about. Early in condition 50 at point little b, 50 little b, early points refer to roading infrastructure that are close to or form part of the freight hub project, and points further down the list refer to the wider network. I note that at point two, with regard to the perimeter road, that this the two should read at least 3 metres with regard to the shared path width, which is then consistent with on the front page of the conditions where there's the definition with regard to the perimeter road. Yeah, and that's in line with what's included in the definitions, and I think consistent with what the council are generally providing with regard to shared path width. The next point, so that was the shared path. The next point is with regard to the including the new intersection of Roberts Line with the perimeter road. And this is in Ms. Copplestone's version of the conditions, we've added into a separate point the section of Roberts Line from this intersection out to Kairanga Bunnythorpe Road to make sure that we pick up on any sightline deficiencies that might occur from the driveways that the submitters came and talked to us about.
So when you refer to Ms. Copplestone's conditions, this is not this version?
It's a moving feast, and this is this was yesterday's.
Yeah.
And there's been quite a bit, well, not quite, yeah, a bit, there's work, ongoing work.
Just, yeah, to clarify, that when Ms. Copplestone comes up shortly, sorry, feedback, we'll have this set of conditions that incorporates some of the things that...
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to be clear that you were referring, when you say to Ms. Copplestone's conditions, to something other than the 29
yes.
September version.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's sort of, well, for me, this set of conditions is pretty close, but there are one or two subtle points that will come through in the next version, of which the next...
It's actually fine to highlight.
Yeah. And at the next point, with regard to the Richardson's Line, Roberts Line, with the wording will change to upgraded intersection rather than new, because this is an existing intersection which the council are looking to put a roundabout in at, and then there'll be a future upgraded roundabout. So the wording for that intersection will be upgraded intersection. So yes, I don't think I necessarily need to read through this list. It's just the fact of the early points being the ones that form part of the project, and then moving further down into some of the slightly more peripheral parts of the local network where I consider that there are effects that we need to keep an eye on. And then at point little f just helps, that's helping with keeping an eye on projects where there's more certainty as time goes by and programmed and funded projects change. And small g are the projects with less allows for some consideration of projects which have less certainty but which are on the radar for the different road controlling authorities. Condition 51 is around ensuring that the perimeter road is open and operating prior to the closure of Railway Road, so making sure that switchover occurs. Condition 52 is requiring KiwiRail to demonstrate that immediate and local road network will operate safely and efficiently. This is 52 and 52 capital A. At 52C, this is the shared path crossing of the railway line in the vicinity of the Northeast Industrial Zone. So providing some flexibility for where that will occur, because there's the possibility of trains being shunted back through that section, but wanting to provide for that connection so that people can use the shared path along the eastern side of the railway line to then access the NEIZ for employment opportunities and such. I think the next conditions are the construction traffic management plan ones on page 15, starting at condition 61. And I think the key points here are some of the sort of scoping points for the construction traffic management plan in condition 65, where we're identifying that there's the identification of the numbers, frequency, and timing of traffic movements for each phase of the construction program, identifying safe site access routes and access arrangements and locations of access points, and ensuring point C, ensuring safe operation, including for nighttime movement of construction vehicles. Point D, in providing for the detour of public transport and active mode routes and the school bus, and provision of temporary speed limits. point E, making sure that the council's shared path and the Te Araroa Trail remain open for use for the public at all times, but of course allowing for diversions as needed. And point G, making sure that that the properties on Roberts Line still have access through construction. There's a section of Roberts Line beyond foodstuffs and heading towards Kairanga Bunnythorpe, which we've not really, there's not been much talk about how they may be affected, and obviously they're going to be on, there's going to be some roading changes happening in front of their properties, and just wanting to make sure that they continue to have ongoing access. Point I is that the business on the opposite side of the railway that's accessed by the private crossing, and making sure that they get early opportunity for to have a permanent access form down to Roberts Line. And we've got condition at point K, covering the looking at the monitoring locations and frequency for construction traffic movement, and point L, how the road condition will be monitored and maintained, and will come down to then at condition 67A, this is where the requirements of those pre-construction baseline surveys are included. And I note that this condition has, this is 67 big A, capital A, pre-construction baseline surveys. And these have evolved during the hearing, and this version is largely based on advice from Mr. Van Bentham. And in this section, we've deleted the safety and performance of, so point two has been deleted out. So this condition will just be about the pavement condition survey and modelling. And I think that's... Oh, actually, no. I think then we've got the operational side of things. It's getting ahead of myself. Yep. So then moving to page 19, and condition 78, the operational traffic management plan. So then condition 81 is setting the frequency, the process and frequency for the monitoring. Requiring the actual and forecast traffic generation at each of the freight hub access points to be provided. Assessment and reporting of the safety and performance of each of the freight hub's access points with allowance for the interaction with the rail crossings within the site. So particularly bringing in that point, which is there are internal railway crossings, I think, at each of the accesses into the freight hub, but I guess with the southernmost one will be the busiest, but it's something that needs to be more certainty provided around that interaction as the design progresses. Condition 81, capital A, sets the standard of performance and safety for the road infrastructure, so including the sort of efficiency levels of service and also safety requirements. And condition 82, we're then looking at the review and update of the operational traffic management plan. So there's a number of stages included here, the first being around relevant outline plan works, We've also included some stages around vehicle movement thresholds, the first one being what's largely the 4,200 vehicles, largely sort of the initial stage traffic volumes. The 12,000 is the full build-out, and the 8,000 is a sort of in-between case. I'm noting at 82 Little E that a requirement that the operational traffic management monitoring would occur at least every 6 years if it hadn't been triggered by one of the other factors, and having tied that in with the two-yearly monitoring, so the two-yearly monitoring of the operational traffic and then the six-yearly review of the operational traffic management plan. Yes, and I think, and then the final point at condition 84, that if the operational traffic management plan hadn't been, there's no requirement to update, review, and update it any more often than 12 months on an annual basis if it got triggered by, because obviously there's a number of ways that that review could get triggered, and recognising that you wouldn't want for it to be being reviewed more frequently than on an annual basis. So I'm not sure whether that's going to have reduced or increased the pain, but happy to take questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Fraser. Commissioner Makinson.
Good afternoon, Ms. Fraser. I think that may actually have increased your pain, but apologies for that. So if you could bear with me, I have some questions in general, which are likely to overlap with some that have come about from what you just shared with us. So I'm going to be dodging between documents, so be patient with me whilst I do that. That would be appreciated. So I think I'd like to start at point 8 of your statement today, where you are talking about the potential wider network effects and delays and congestion that you consider may arise. And may therefore affect a large portion of the community through their day-to-day life. And I guess I'm just after a little bit more insight as to whether you consider that the draft conditions and the level of service monitoring elements address that concern for you, or are you putting forward that essentially it is almost a fact of life that traffic tends to increase and we'll get on with it?
I think it's a bit of both, and I think I do have concerns about the potential for increased congestion and the effects for a wide range of people, and so sort of trying to walk a path where there's some requirement to ensure that the traffic network will work at the time of certainly of the initial stage opening. Also recognizing that there's a whole lot of things that could play out in the background which could affect traffic flows within the network. Recognizing that their existing congestion isn't Kiwi Rail's, you know, there's some existing congestion there that it isn't for them necessarily to fix all of that up, but also that there is a potential for considerable amount of traffic, especially on that railway road corridor to and from Tremaine Ave, which will carry on regardless of, I believe, regardless of the Paniti ring road type treatments, because we've got a lot of traffic that travels between the city and the site. Well, that's what's being forecast. So yes, it's trying to provide some accountability, but also trying to be realistic as well.
Thank you. And you mentioned penity. And I would welcome your views on whether you consider it is feasible or should have been feasible to undertake a sensitivity assessment of the potential effects of the hub on penity and vice versa through the modelling exercise.
I think it would have been a relatively easy task to add those, add a few links in, delete a few links. I don't think it would have needed. I think there was some concern about showing lines on a map and what that might mean, but I don't believe for that sort of sensitivity testing it needs to be. You would be identifying where those links necessarily lay, but rather that you're putting into a traffic model that option of connectivity. I felt all along that even just as a sensitivity test, it would have possibly provided some insight.
And just based on your experience, given we don't have that modelling in front of us, what general outcome would you potentially have expected in terms of how it might change traffic flows?
I think the key outcome that I would have anticipated would be avoiding having the traffic go through central Bunnythorpe. So having the bypasses of Bunnythorpe would remove that situation. We would see that the traffic would avoid that. I think we would probably still, as I have alluded to, I think we'd still see these significant traffic flows on Railway Road to and from the city because of the distribution function of the freight hub. So those businesses are all moving goods within the city. I think it's 75% of the trips are within the city, and I provided a calculation in my evidence. I think I got to it's about 6% of the trips or something I thought would actually come on and off the freight ring road into the site. But it was a sort of back of the envelope calculation. But I think the key things were the avoiding traffic going through Bunnythorpe and but I think we would still see the city network being quite busy with the freight hub traffic in there.
Okay. So that leads me to paragraph 23 of your statement, where you're discussing the evidence of Ms. Downs on behalf of Waka Kotahi NZTA. And in part F of that, you allude to a comment that she made as Kiwi Rail progresses through the development of the proposed freight hub, a review of the preferred penity program will need to be undertaken. In your opinion, what does that mean, given it's not your statement? What is your interpretation, I suspect is a fairer question, of that statement in relation to how penity and the hub influence each other?
Well, I think the if the notice of requirement was to be confirmed and Kiwi Rail were to start progressing the development of the hub, that that would add, it would strengthen the case for the penity program in that part of the city. So it could alter their the priorities of their projects within that program, because as you'll be aware, it comprises a whole suite of measures.
Thank you. And looping back then to what we've just been discussing around likely traffic flows, even though we don't have the modelling to help us, and the expectation of potentially around 6% of heavy vehicle traffic would use the freight ring road element, acknowledging that the PNT is a whole suite of programs. I don't know if you've been listening in on recent days where we've been delving into the chicken and egg issue and interdependence of the hub and potentially PNT in the Basin Bridge context. I was just wondering if you could comment on that and whether you feel that the hub requires the ring road or it is an added benefit. Or not, as the case may be.
I think, the council have got an eye on, or I mean, there's been a long-term consideration of a rural freight ring road of some sort, and the council have are already looking to provide some improved amenity on Kairanga Bunnythorpe Road, and we've got the roundabouts program for State Highway 3 and State Highway 54. So there, this will all help with moving freight along that corridor, and I think the council also keen to strengthen the connection of Robert's Line up to Kairanga Bunnythorpe Road. So I think the freight hub will benefit from the PNITI program, and there's obviously some wider roading network consideration. I mean, I think when we look more regionally, which sort of horizons and probably also David Murphy pointed at, that there's some, when it comes to that sort of more regional significance of the distribution function, that's where having a strengthened freight ring road provision will begin to come into play. But so there's definitely an alignment. But with most of the traffic moving between the city and the freight hub, that's possibly more important than the freight move. A smaller amount of freight movement out towards the ring road. I'm not sure whether I've.
So, in summary, what I'm understanding from what you said is that whilst the hub would benefit from PNT, it doesn't depend on it, and the potential vehicle movement benefits don't rely on PNT either.
Yeah, I think the only point I would add is my concern around Bunnythorpe. So that obviously the PNT program includes bypasses of Bunnythorpe, which is, that in itself, I think that's important in itself, regardless of how the ring road shapes up.
So that leads me on to something Mr. Van Bentham said. Once again, either earlier this week or last week, I must apologise, I'm losing track of which day we're on. And that was around the council's view that the long-term use of the top end of Railway Road as a connection point for perimeter road and therefore access to the hub is not supported by council, and they would much prefer to see Tenaya Road out to KB Road being used as an alternative. Do you see any of that desire being brought out through the conditions as they currently stand? Is it something that you feel would be covered by the Road Network Integration Plan?
Yeah, we've given this a bit of consideration, and I think we have tried through the conditions to encourage definitely to encourage discussion and consideration of all the different roading situations that could play out in that physical area, because of course we've got the potential for the ring road, for a southern bypass of Bunnythorpe, all playing out in that corridor. And so it is key to ensure that that there is an integration around all of that, and that we end up with the freight hub connecting in an appropriate way, that not preventing the bypass route, and also not resulting in the long-term channeling of traffic into central Bunnythorpe. So it's quite tricky, because we don't, while we can put in a traffic model, we could put in a line for where that bypass would be, and I'm not sure in terms of, you know, of how it would be physically formed in terms of levels and things like that, whether it ends up on a sort of ground level or whether it has some elevation, and how the freight hub might connect at that northern end onto it. And so it's I can see how there would be a benefit of a connection up on through the Tenaya Road corridor to KB Road, but that, depending on what happens with any other, with the Paniti type programs, that could change whether that's the best outcome. I also, looking at Tenaya Road, that section has a bit of a kink in it, and as it goes over the Mangoni stream, and I suspect that the existing corridor wouldn't be adequate to put an upgrade, you know, an upgraded, it's basically a lane at the moment, and to upgrade it to a sort of more arterial road connection, I don't think could happen within the existing corridor, and isn't part of the designation. So it would require others. It would require the council, I guess, to provide a designation for a link through there if it was desirable. The council, I know the council are improving the bridges on KB Road, so it would, again, once the bridges are really the constraint on that being a route through into Bunnythorpe and then off to Ashurst or up to Fielding. So there is a lot of sense in a connection through there. It's becoming increasingly possible as with the programme work for the bridges, opening it up as a route that could take the trucks, albeit that it's still a narrow, you know, there's still further works to be done on the road, but the bridge limits would be removed.
So realistically, having that road network integration plan as a communication channel that is ongoing is a very important mechanism to be able to pick up these moving complex parts to make sure that we actually get, at the end of the day, something that works cohesively.
There's a necessary need to allow for some flexibility. I think Mr. Jessen's pointing me to a...
She doesn't have that, because it's in the set that's coming, but that's what we added last night to Chris's point.
So there's a... There's a point that we've added, which will come through with Ms. Copplestone's version, which says, in the event of the Ring Road project being confirmed, the timing and arrangements of any changes to the connections of the requiring authority's designated road network to integrate with the Ring Road. So that's in the road network integration plan.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay. All right, I'm going to hop back to point 15 of your statement today, if I may. And this is around access to foodstuffs and your concerns about the ability of heavy commercial vehicles to be able to pull out safely. Without having to go down to the roundabout at Roberts Line and Richards Line, do a U-turn and come back. Now, that may or may not be acceptable to foodstuffs, and realistically only they can answer that question. The question I have for you is whether the condition set provides a mechanism, in your view, to ensure that whatever is done on Robert's line to ensure they have access to their site as a well-established and permitted activity, you know, consented activity, that that mechanism is in place, that they have some form of input into the process because, you know, their access is being changed.
Yes, I think we've included in both the construction and the operational management plans the requirement for consideration of those properties all the way along Robert's line from Railway Road through to 803 Robert's line. I was particularly concerned about foodstuffs because of the constraint of the water bore location and that there is a kind of only so much you can do within the corridor there.
Within that road network integration plan condition, I can see that you have the sub-clause that says access needs to be considered. But what I'm trying to understand is, whilst there's a clear set of stakeholders that includes the various road controlling authorities, how do foodstuffs input into that process? Who is going to speak on their behalf to make sure that their access functions the way that they could reasonably expect it to function, given they are an existing activity?
Yeah.
That includes any IZ businesses.
Okay, I mean, Mr. Jessen's pointing out that the community liaison forum includes the NEIZ businesses, but I'm wondering whether we possibly need to pull out a more specific point to the, whether it's in the RNIP, specifically with the reference to foodstuffs and their access.
I would welcome yours and Ms. Copplestone's views on that, because I do feel that there is a serious potential for not just foodstuffs, but also the properties at 422 and 422A, Robert's Line, and, you know, those who have businesses in the local whose access is going to be changed to almost fall off the side of the desk as this project potentially progresses. So, you know, I accept that there is the community liaison forum that is a strong enough mechanism to make sure that they're legally and lawfully established accesses are
I mean, I think the 422A and 422, they've probably actually got, we mentioned them explicitly a few times, but yes, I think the, I'll check with regard to the foodstuffs one, because I think the combination of the scale of their activity and how their trucks work and the fact that their building layout will be entirely based on where their driveways are and the inward and outward pattern really needs to, they need to know that it will work.
Thank you. So paragraph 24. You're noting that the Minister of Education has provided a letter stating that they're happy with the draft conditions. I'm assuming that relates to the August the 13th set?
Yes, and I think they had concerns. I think they had a few safety concerns, and but yes, they're obviously comfortable now.
Okay, right. 25, infrastructure risk rating. It's all right, we're on page 11. It can't be that too much more painful. So, obviously, I asked Mr. Georgeson about the infrastructure risk rating process. Because my experience of it, I think, aligns with yours in that it does not appear to consider heavy commercial vehicles specifically. Traffic is one element of the input and is a factual element. My question is more around the roadside hazard element of that process, because I think I'm quite aligned with you that it is a useful tool, but it does not provide the whole answer. And I just wondered if, in your experience, with the roadside hazard element being relatively subjective as to how you identify the severity of hazards, their proximity to the carriageway, the potential outcome of any crash involving those hazards, whether you feel that the IRR outcome actually moves us forward in this instance?
To be honest, I've given it very little weight in my own evaluation. I'm more driven by the safety principle that we're given of reducing serious and fatal injuries on the road network, coming through at a national, well, at all levels, coming through, and then the knowledge that as soon as we're mixing freight with vulnerable road users, it's almost, if there is a crash, it's almost always going to end up in a serious injury or a fatality. So I can't move away from that as being the test for me, in a way.
So having said that, what would you say to us as being your consideration of the overall safety consideration we should make in relation to this potential designation?
Well, I think we're beginning to see a package forming, partly through Kiwi Rail and partly through works that the council are already doing of a much improved network of shared paths for pedestrians and cyclists through this part of the city. So the commitment to the Palmerston North to Fielding shared path, the shared path that's included around the perimeter road. There's a shared path going in on Richardson's line. So we're beginning to see, so in terms of the vulnerable road users, we're beginning to see a significantly improved situation to the existing situation. And then in terms of the vehicle side of things, I tend to look more at the crash history and how that might project forward. And I guess the key thing there is that with the new piece of infrastructure, I think we'll have a 80 kilometre an hour speed limit, I think is the thought. And hopefully can be designed in a way, you know, that will manage the interactions that roundabouts are generally safer in terms of vehicle interactions, if you can make sure you deal with your vulnerable users separate to that. And within the main network, the city parts of the network, I suspect the vehicle speeds will slow down. And so then it's probably more a case of the congestion rather than the safety, because we'll see as the vehicle speeds slow with congestion, then the severity of the outcomes of any crashes will be less.
Thank you. Right. Bye. I do have a couple of questions on the draft conditions from yesterday. So bear with me if some of these have moved on. 61. So condition 81, capital A. Is where you've introduced a condition requiring safety performance of intersections and links as set out in 81C. I was just wondering whether you envisage that being a one-off, or is this intended to be part of the regular monitoring activity?
81A, and that's... I think this was my expectation was that this was an ongoing assessment to make sure that the freight hub's immediate infrastructure continued to perform as anticipated.
And do you feel that undertaking a road safety audit on that regular basis would actually provide any benefit, given the design will have been audited and post-construction implementation would have been audited, if the only thing that's changing is traffic?
Yeah. Yeah, so then it's the possibility of, I suppose it might be more appropriate to consider if there had been any crashes and what that a road safety audit might be triggered by if there had been any serious or fatal crashes in the intervening time period, that then the audit would get undertaken rather than.
That's something you might like to have a think about. I understand where you're coming from, and I understand the need to make sure we have an ongoing, safe and efficient network, but I think we also need to try and balance that with reasonableness.
Yes, yeah.
And then the other question I had, when you were talking us through condition 82, you mentioned the 2-yearly monitoring, and then we've got this every 6 years, if we haven't hit those vehicle thresholds, a review and an update of the operational traffic management plan. And I have to confess, I've not read these conditions in any detail. Could you point me to where the 2-yearly monitoring is mentioned?
So 81 little a. On top of, towards the top of page 20.
Thank you very much. Yes, excellent. That's very helpful. And then condition 84. You've got the timing for review and update of being annually.
Well, not more than annually.
Do you feel that captures the potential changes that could happen within a year? And once again, I'm trying to find a position of balance, but I guess I just want to explore that with you. You know, given that there are a lot of potential road network changes coming forwards, you know, there could be a significant difference from 1 year to the next in the environment that we're considering in terms of the transport networks.
I mean, I think because through the operational traffic management plan, we are requiring, for instance, liaison and feedback from all of the road controlling authorities and from Horizons, and that there's hopefully each time a review would be done, there would be a looking to the future as well, you know, what's coming up as well. So both the program works as well as the ones that are sitting sort of slightly more peripheral to that, so that you'd I wouldn't expect for there to be any surprises within a 12-month period, given that we've got all of the parties involved in the process.
No, thank you. That makes sense. That does. All right. The good news is I'm now going to scroll down my questions that I had earlier. I have a feeling we've probably dealt with most of them, so we should be on the home straight, if not there already. Thank you very much. You've been very helpful. I'm done.
You're very welcome.
Commissioner Palmieri.
Kia ora. Thank you very much for your evidence. And I have no questions in relation to the transport issues for you. Your evidence has been extremely well set out. It's very clear. And your responses to the questions raised by the Commission this afternoon have been very helpful. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Sweetman.
Good afternoon, Ms. Fraser. I do have a couple of questions for you, and I'm just going to scroll down and find them. Turning to paragraph 27 of today's evidence and the potential about a corridor being provided from the NEIZ to the freight hub, if it was to be on the eastern side of Richardson's line, would that not impact on the foodstuffs distribution centre?
It would, yes. But it's also that side is the side where the goods would be mostly being accumulated from.
Yeah. It seems to me that would be quite a substantive thing in its own right in terms of such a thing occurring, wouldn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
And no doubt require consents and designations and other things as well. Just on paragraph 29, we're talking about 422 and 422A railway road, aren't we, rather than Richardson's line? Is that right?
Yeah, it's the whatever the farm gear. it's railway. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That was my only questions from your evidence itself, which was very clear, and you've been incredibly helpful. I do have some questions around the conditions, and I don't know if those are fair. Well, I'll start going through them. With all the change in conditions, I'm finding the time to try to review them and be able to meaningfully ask questions a bit difficult, but I'll do my best. And Mr. Jessen or Ms. Copplestone might need to assist here.
Well, Commissioner Sweetman, if it helps at all, Ms. Copplestone is next, and Ms. Fraser, I understand it, isn't leaving any time soon. So perhaps on the fly we could force Ms. Fraser to stick around with Ms. Copplestone and collectively answer questions on traffic issues, if that's helpful.
Okay. That might be the best approach. A lot of the questions, I suppose, I do have more related to Ms. Copplestone, which she might want your advice on. So we'll do it that way. Thank you, Ms. Fraser. You have been very helpful.
I have one question, but disclaimer, it's not my question. It's a submitter's question, Dale O'Reilly, who, with her partner, Peter Gore, have land affected by the acquisition of the land of the proposed designation. And the question is this. Following on from the evidence provided on Friday that Railway Road will be closed at Mabel Street End once there is an overpass of the NIMT linking Ashurst Bunnythorpe Road directly to the freight hub's northern perimeter road, what is referred to in the Paniti as the southern bypass of Bunnythorpe. So that's the framing of the setting of the question. The question is, how will Bunnythorpe residents who live on the west of the NIMT continue to access required services within the Bunnythorpe's CBD? I think that term is used advisedly to mean school, shop, sport, recreation and garage. That is, will the current Kāranga Bunnythorpe Road railway crossing remain?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is that it absolutely would. And also that, I think, referring to Friday is presumably will be based on what Mr. Van Benten would have spoken of, which was council's desire for the connection to be not for Railway Road as it approaches Maple Street, for it not to have that connection, but rather to be more over towards Tenaya Road.
Yeah.
But there is no certainty at this stage. The Kiwi Rail notice of requirement is for the connection over towards that end.
Yeah.
That's what's before us. But if my expectation would be that Maple Street would continue to connect to Railway Road there. The intersection would remain. So if the hub was not connecting to that part of the network, if there were other roading solutions over towards the west, and the traffic would be going up that way, it would just be local traffic from Maple Street, and the short section of Railway Road would feed into Bunnythorpe, and they would all still be crossing the railway line as they do at the moment. And I think it's a very likely future scenario, but one which Kiwi Rail have chosen to go with there not being any of the Paniti programs, which has sort of forces this to consider this situation, which I think is unlikely actually to ever eventuate. But
are you happy with that, Commissioner Mackinson? Is there anything that arising out of that?
No, I think that sounds within the realms of what I'd expect. If there were any changes, I think it would be up to council to assess the effects of road closures at the time that they managed to make.
All right, thank you very much. It's much appreciated. Thank you. All right, you're not allowed. You're not released, apparently. So now, have Ms. Cobblestone.